Everyone, it's Dr. Valerie here.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mackey. I have a bad habit. I keep wanting to look at the screen
I
and the
know.
camera's up there. It's this weird, we're using Zoom right now, and the camera is like connected by Bluetooth. So the camera's like by itself on a tripod, and we're using the computer for the screen. So I keep looking there, but the camera's up there.
Yeah,
So
because normally for our podcast, we have our other cameras around, but this one's for our Progress Your Hormones community. We're doing a live recording presentation for them.
instead of a three camera setup, now we're just down to the one camera.
Just for this one.
Now we're going to probably end up doing more of these, so for the community and for YouTube. But this one we're going to end up talking about sleep today. Big deal for everyone, but really for perimenopausal women and menopausal women. Like, what of over the years of all the women you've talked to, at this point, thousands of them. I mean, how many of them don't have sleep problems?
Not very many. I will definitely say, out of all might have even practicing you 2003, me 2004, that sleep is always one of the top concerns when it comes to women's health. And it seems like it does, granted we work with perimenopausal and menopausal women, and across the board, perimenopause and menopause, it's so many issues about sleep. So we're going to break this up into different, I don't want know what we would call it, kind of like types of sleep, because some people have trouble falling asleep, some people have trouble staying asleep. So we have a whole list of all the different kind of sleep concerns, but we're going to set this presentation all about women's restorative sleep and tips on how you can sleep better.
Yeah, now I think that if someone doesn't sleep well, they go to a sleep study. They're looking for sleep apnea. They're looking for airway obstruction things. But beyond that, there's really not, then someone's just prescribed sleeping pills, which most of our patients do not want to do sleeping pills. They sort of know you end up doing like, sleepwalking in the middle of the night, buying things on Amazon because you've taken some kind of a medication that nobody really looks forward to taking. But if you don't sleep, at some point you sort of get desperate. All right, we've had a few patients over the years that are just they just no matter what, they just can't sleep, and they're sort of they don't want to do the pharmaceutical route, but at the same time they don't really have a lot of options. Now, eventually, usually you and I have been able to help them figure it out, at least most of the time. When you and I were thinking about this, in my own mind, just to organize our thoughts and our thinking before we start recording, I sort of broke it down into three main categories in my mind. Okay, so of course, if we're talking perimenopause and menopause, we have estrogen progesterone decline, right? That's a whole cascade of issues. There's, of course, which I don't think it's really understood a lot, is the blood sugar insulin connection. Okay. And then the one that a lot of people realize, or a lot of people understand, at least in the functional medicine space, is cortisol, right? So why don't we start with the estrogen progesterone one and sort of go from there?
Okay, sure. So you think about in perimenopause, you have the ebbs and flows of estradiol, and that's going to go spiking up or it can drop down into a valley. But a lot of times in perimenopause, the hallmark is that progesterone goes down. So that was one of the biggest things, especially when I first started in practice, was seeing women with that lower progesterone having a terrible time staying asleep. So a lot of times you would see trouble fall. They wouldn't say they have any trouble falling asleep. No problem. Hit the head, hit their head on the pillow and they go right to sleep. But then they notice they wake up like 4 hours later. They'll either wake up for many hours or they'll wake up all night long. And that had to do a lot with progesterone. And progesterone does modulate GABA receptors in our brain. So when that GABA goes up, that cortisol naturally wants to go down. So if you don't have progesterone in your system, and even though you're cycling, so people will say, well, if I'm cycling, I only make progesterone 14 days of the month. What about the other 14 days? All the hormones connect. If you have really nice levels of progesterone, that's going to upregulate your receptors for estrogen. That's going to downregulate your receptors or downregulate your cortisol. So even when you're not, prior to ovulation, women will still have trouble sleeping because of the lack of progesterone from that luteal phase prior. So that's perimenopause.
Now it makes me think every time we talk about this, a number of years ago, you wrote like a blog post. And then recently, in the last 6 months, you wrote in your newsletter about your three little characters. And we just sent out an email about your newsletter archive. And you have the vampire, the ghost and the ghoul are, there's a poltergeist in there somewhere else too, right? You have
Yeah.
like, so the one that wakes up many times during the night, the perimenopausal woman, and the one that wakes up one time for a long period of time, which one is which?
So yeah, that was newsletter number two. So there's a library archive if you want to look at it, because it's October, so that's
Hell
Halloween.
yeah,
So
it's October 2nd, so it'll be Halloween in a, you know, in a few
weeks.
weeks.
So the other that one was more about the adrenal glands, but it was paired up. It does pair up because all the hormones go together. So there was the vampire, the trouble falling asleep. That's because the cortisol is too high at night. You don't typically see that as often in menopause and perimenopause. That just because that's not as common to see that, but you do see it where women get a second wind and they want to stay up and do all the fun things.
But wouldn't you say though, in menopause though, once that estrogen really does fall, sort of drop off, they have a hard time turning their brains off?
I do think that is, and that's something that we'll go over in terms of even for sleep tips, but I still feel like the majority of my menopausal patients really don't have that much trouble falling asleep. It's staying asleep, but there is the vampire, and you see that in all ages because that cortisol is too high.
Yeah.
And the vampire has too low a cortisol in the morning, which is why it's too hard to wake up. And then there was, so we had the vampire, and then the zombie was the one that had no cortisol at all. Like their poor cortisol's bottomed out, so they're tired 24/7. And then we have the ghoul, which I did kind of break up into like the poltergeist, somebody that's waking up all night, or they're waking up for extended hours in the middle of the night. And that has to do with that, like you're mentioning, cortisol. So you fall asleep and then your cortisol awakening response happens too quickly. Like it's supposed to happen, 5 to 6. We wake up bright and bushy-tailed in the morning. But if that cortisol rises at 1 to 3 and 3 in the morning, then you're up for, then you're up and you're not going to have
The
great
literally
sleep.
the bewitching hour,
Yeah.
right? I mean, that's just a terrible time. 3 o'clock in the morning, I sort of have a tendency somewhere between 2 and 3. Either I sleep really well and I wake up at like, 4:35, which is still early but fine, or I wake up at, like, 2:45 or 3:25, which is like a terrible time. Then if you're awake for a while, then it's, you're getting so much closer to the morning that, if you can just push that back a little bit closer to actually wake up time.
So that's what we want to give tips on when it comes to that cortisol. But like you said, cortisol has a connection with estrogen and progesterone. So when estrogen and progesterone drop down, then that cortisol can kind of run amok. So that's why you see in perimenopause trouble staying asleep, and in menopause also, because that estrogen, and we'll go over a little bit more about the hormones and really more specifically, but when that estrogen and progesterone drop, it's not even about the hot flashes or the night sweats. It's about they wake up in the middle of the night. So because that cortisol is coming up. But something that's always interesting, you had mentioned that it has, cortisol also has such a tie with blood sugar.
So the three things that I mentioned, so estrogen, progesterone, blood sugar, insulin, and cortisol. If you got a blood sugar insulin issue, then you pretty much also have a cortisol issue at the same time. So if your blood sugar is bouncing around all day long because carbs, 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 now it's going to sort of mirror that while you're trying to sleep, and now your blood sugar is crashing, and then your cortisol spiking to, and then you end up waking up. So now people are waking up multiple times a night as well because they have, in some ways, dysregulation on both sides, blood sugar, and on the cortisol side. And then, like I said, you're dumping out cortisol all night long when you should be sleeping. You can't get down to those deeper levels of restoration sleep, and you wake up exhausted in the morning. Like, how many patients over the years does that just sort of describe what their night is like? I mean, pretty much all of them to some extent.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you think about one of cortisol's just job for survival is like the other day, I woke up, I started working. I ended up skipping lunch just because it was busy. So I don't pass out and, die at, 9 to 1 in the afternoon because I wasn't eating. Is your body will secrete a little extra cortisol, which tells your liver to do some gluconeogenesis, and you can make sugar without having eating it. So that, humans could go days without eating if they had to.
Yeah,
Water's a whole nother
three
story.
days, not 3 hours.
Yeah. But that's cortisol's job. But that can become dysregulated when you have the ups and downs. And what we always talk about is the insulin resistance, because that can throw the sugar around all over the place. So maybe it's not even just strictly about the blood sugar. It's really about working on the insulin.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the insulin is sort of like the blood sugar is sort of the result, but it really is dictated by what your insulin status is. Now, conventionally, everyone just looks at glucose, but really looking at a, and I saw some information when we were preparing for this, even 1 week, and I think it's even shorter than that, even like one night, but 1 week of disrupted sleep can increase insulin resistance by like 20 to 30%. So you have a bad week of sleep, or you're traveling, or maybe you're in a stressful situation, your sleep sort of goes in the toilet, and all of a sudden now you're more insulin resistant, which then creates more of the same problem, and then the whole cycle starts to spiral. Especially, I think this may be the part of the reason why some of those women that are in perimenopause and menopause, they gain weight without really changing much. Their sleep gets disrupted so dramatically, almost like for some of them, like overnight. And then all of a sudden now they're putting on, 10, 15, 20 pounds, and they really haven't changed much, except for the fact they don't sleep very well.
Yeah, that combination of, because estrogen does really have an effect on insulin and preventing insulin resistance, and it also has an effect on weight distribution, like where we gain weight, but then also it buffers cortisol. So now cortisol, like I said, can run amok on that.
Yeah.
It was when you were talking there, I was thinking about like how many people have eaten lunch. Like I remember when we at this office I used to work at, sometimes we get some lunch catered, and how many people get so tired
Oh.
after lunch. Like I remember I had a some kind of sandwich or something because it was really good, and that's why I still remember it. It was
Yeah,
like a
yeah.
catered lunch, and I got so tired. And that is insulin. That's the result of blood, of the blood sugar and the insulin.
The Thanksgiving effect,
Yes.
right? We wrote like an ebook like a number of years ago called
Years
The
ago.
Perfect Weight Loss Solution. It was a disaster. There was misspellings all over the place, and it was sort of like embarrassing. I think the information was pretty good, and we still talk a lot about that stuff now. The Thanksgiving effect is that post-meal crash that everybody has. Now, a little story about that. When we were in Vegas, I used to work at a vitamin company there, and you were busy doing something else, and I was working in the research and development, product development department. And my office was right down the hall from the accounting department. And I think there was like four or five ladies that were in charge of the books and the accounting. And there was like one lead accountant or bookkeeper, or I don't know what exactly know what her title was. But every morning they all start rolling in about, 8:30. I think they had to be to work by 9, and just talking, 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 and then they would take about 45 minutes, and they would go to their offices. And then about 11:30, quarter to 12, they'd all get the stack of menus out, right, from all their favorite restaurants, and what are we going to have today, and Mexican or Thai food. I mean, there were some really great restaurants in Las Vegas, so I don't blame them for enjoying their
Oh,
little
yes.
lunchtime process. And you could just tell they're having like a nice social interaction. So then they'd all go out to, someone would carpool, someone would drive, they'd all go to lunch, and they come back, and for as loud as it was in the morning when they're all like having a good time and they all got their coffee and they're all awake, it was dead silent from about, 1 o'clock until about 2:30 in the after, almost pretty much until the end of the day. I guarantee you, if you took like a productivity,
I
rated their
think there are
productivity,
studies like
there
that.
totally is that. So they had probably really good productivity in the first half of the day. Then they go to lunch, and they come back from lunch, and it was like you could hear a pin drop. It was just dead silent. And then you'd walk down the hall, and they had big glass windows in front of each office, and they're like sitting on their desks, like kind of like
Uh-oh,
holding
you're
their heads
snitching
up.
on him.
Yeah. Well, that was like, that was like 20 years ago. I mean, that was a long time ago. I'm sure most of them don't even work there anymore, if the company's even around. It was sort of comical. Now, you wouldn't notice any of that if you didn't understand what was happening there, but that's the perfect example. Literally, the Thanksgiving effect. You eat a huge turkey dinner, mashed potatoes, stuffing, cranberries, and then 30 minutes, you're passed out on the couch. And then what happens? You wake back up, and now you're hungry
And you're
again.
hungry again. So
Yeah.
that is kind of what you see in that nighttime effect of
Yeah.
this almost like this roller coaster of cortisol,
Yep.
which is managed by all the other hormones. So they all work together. So you think about cortisol wants to be high at night or in the morning, not at night. That's a vampire, but it's high in the morning and then it comes down so we can sleep at night. But if there is some blood sugar and insulin dysregulation, that can tremendously create kind of the ups and downs of cortisol or waking up at night.
Yeah, sure. And I think so people have this, normal siesta time. I think humans are sort of hardwired for this 2 to 5 o'clock window. They get really tired and sleepy, and then they sort of come out of that. And then they might get a little bit more tired after dinner, and then they come out of it again. And if they push through that second wind too far, or maybe we've had patients like they're watching TV, when they're relaxing for the day and they start yawning and doze off, okay? Or if they get a little sleepy but don't fall asleep and just try to push through it, then they're up for a long time because now their cortisol is spiking, and now they're either awake for a long time or now they have that disrupted sleep. So, just a story about how our actions during the day can have a huge impact of how we sleep at night. I don't think that really gets talked about enough on the connection between what we're eating and how we're sleeping.
And that's one thing that, we'll go over a little bit of some tips and tricks for good sleep. But a lot of times, instead of just focusing on the evening time, is focusing on bringing up that cortisol in the morning, is actually doing some adrenal work in the morning,
Right.
which will help that cortisol naturally want to come down at night.
Yeah, you and I as naturopaths, so if you support adrenals, which you can't really do really at all through medication, but if you kind of prop it up in that morning window, then automatically you'd expect there to be a compensation in the evening, which I think sometimes works, sometimes not, sometimes can be really effective, sometimes it takes a while. All right, so we sort of went right from estrogen, progesterone, right into cortisol. Okay, and we sort of kind of jumped over those two with a little bit of blood sugar in between. So, do you want to go back to your other chart on there and break it down?
Yeah, let's. Now, there are so many different sleep concerns over the years that we've heard. So we may not even mention all of them. Like some of you might have say, hey, what about this? Or I sleep this way, or this works for me, or this doesn't work for me. So feel free to reach out or message or, put it in a discussion or in the feed there so we can talk about it. But we kind of went through and put through several of actually 3 pages worth of the common kind of sleep complaints that we've come across over the last 20 years. So of course, can't fall asleep easily. That's not, like I said, I don't find that as common, but I do know a lot of women where it's like, everybody's asleep. This is my time. I want to stay up and maybe watch a show or do a project or do something that's interesting. So that technically would be pushing that cortisol envelope.
So what do you think when they what is an appropriate bedtime for an adult when they can't fall asleep when you would constitute that being a problem?
What do you mean?
Like you said, like the vampire, like they stay up to a certain time
Oh,
in the night.
well, it depends on what time they have to wake up in the morning, of course, but definitely trying falling asleep after midnight. We really want to go. We want to sleep like babies and go to bed early. Like the earlier you go to bed, the better that is for your insulin, the better that is for your melatonin production, better that is for your cortisol awakening response and just your diurnal curve. But I do know when people say, because I ask them all the time, where do you get like a second wind at night, like 8:30, 9? Like you're like, oh, I feel really good. That means their cortisol starting to go up. So then you want to work on bringing that cortisol down. Now, there are a number of things you can do for that. Like, what do you normally do for somebody that says, you know what? I can't go to sleep before midnight.
Yeah, right. Well, that's where, like you said, you start in the morning, right? So, one thing that sort of can change that dramatically, and it's super easy, is having a protein breakfast first thing in the morning. Okay. Now, most people, when they have these sleep disturbances and their cortisol is bouncing around all night long, and they wake up, they sort of feel a little nauseated. Like the thought of food first thing in the morning sounds gross. Like they have no appetite. Partially because if your cortisol is high, you're not hungry, right? If your blood sugar is high, you're not hungry, right? So you wake up and you're just like, oh, maybe give me some coffee. But the thought of eating an omelet or eating some eggs or eating a protein source just doesn't sound very
You
good.
said something that if the blood sugar is high, you're not hungry. If the cortisol's
Hi.
low or high,
Hi.
so high in the morning. So somebody that would have trouble falling asleep at night would normally I find that their cortisol in the morning is actually a little bit low.
I think it's a little bit of a paradoxical problem there. Maybe it's more on the blood sugar side, like that little bit of that dawn phenomenon, right? That diabetics have, their blood sugar is a little higher in the morning. Because if their cortisol is bouncing around all night long, but yet they wake up tired. So I think you're right to a point, but because it's been high all night, they still wake up. My point is they just wake up feeling nauseated and they don't have an appetite, right? So now they go hours and hours and hours in the morning with no food. They gotta drive, they gotta go to work, they got a bad email, they got a, a crazy boss, they're more stressed. So now you're putting cortisol on top of cortisol, right? With no food. And then now that sort of perpetuates as they get into the evening and then back into the night.
Do you notice with that pattern that cortisol bottoms out like in the afternoon? Because
Yeah, that's the 2 to 5 o'clock
that's half a
crash.
coffee, in the afternoon,
Yeah,
like some
right.
chocolate.
Those ladies that I was talking about, that are the thing, right around, I think we got to go home around 4:35, right around, 2 o'clock when they're all, heads are bouncing off the desk. They'd all either get more, they'd all get carbs or caffeine or both. Okay, they'd get a second cup of coffee or they'd have some type of pastry or
It's
some.
actually my mother.
Yeah, your
My
mom and
mom
dad do it
does
every day. Yeah, they do it all the time.
got their patterns.
But I think that's a very common thing for a lot of people. So then you perpetuate this dysregulation. And then for the woman that's actually in menopause, so it starts in perimenopause as her hormones are declining. It magnifies the response, the insulin resistance, and the cortisol. And now, by the time they're in menopause, they just can't sleep at all, right? So it's just like this buildup effect. And then, because those hormones are kind of heading, the female hormones are not there to buffer anymore. Those other hormones are sort of dysregulated, and the dysregulation creates more dysregulation, and it just starts to spiral, right? So now someone becomes really insulin resistant. Now you're pre-diabetic. Now you're gaining weight like crazy. So I know with, a new patient that we have, usually our goal for that menopausal woman, especially if she's having disrupted sleep, is to get her temperature and her sleep under control as quickly as possible, right? Because usually for everyone, if we sleep better, we feel better.
So you're meaning the hot flashes, which a lot of women do wake up with night sweats and hot flashes. So that's, of course, estrogen.
Yeah, I mean that's the hot flash part or even the night sweats. Now the night sweats can be, as can be a little bit either or, right? It can be cortisol driven, you're stressed, the blood sugar stuff, or low blood sugar stuff, or it can be on the female hormone side. So that one's a little bit more ambiguous. But even still, temperature and sleep, those are sort of the focus for the first, 30 to 90 days. And because if someone's exhausted, the only way they're going to get their energy back is if their sleep is improved.
Oh, yeah, no, sleep is number one. But I will say in perimenopause, when that you'll see a lot of women will have more night sweats, not normally hot flashes during the day, but in menopause, of course, they can have hot flashes 24/7. So it's kind of deciding, especially like with perimenopause, we'll work on, like you said, the cortisol making, because it can be even like adrenal hot flashes. You can have adrenal nighttime hot flashes. That's very common, even though you're like, I'm not in menopause. You're not in menopause. It's an adrenal or low progesterone, night sweat or hot flash at night. So working on that, but I think the cortisol is kind of like that big picture when you're looking at, not being able to fall asleep. But I always have run into, which was I was so kind of, when I started practice, I was only in my 30s. I mean, I was pretty young. I was so interested that so many women had trouble staying asleep.
Oh, sure. I mean, just like chronically, like they're just desperate to find something that'll just keep them asleep. And I think from a treatment standpoint, even on the supplementation side, the cortisol, blood sugar, insulin is the hardest thing to affect, right? Because that little pattern we were talking about, no breakfast, no food all day, or carbs for breakfast, more carbs for lunch, more carbs for dinner, and you're just compounding that problem. You sort of have to unravel all that in order for, because at that point, HRT or supplements might not really do anything. And even a medication might not still be all that effective. But now, if you fix that underlying hormonal issue, the metabolic hormones, now you might actually have some more success because now blood sugars like this, you and I used to use CGMs, continuous glucose monitors. Now, we haven't used one in what, probably a year, maybe a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Maybe a little longer, but I know when we were using them and when we were, following a good diet, blood sugar would stay nice and level. It'd be a little bit of a fluctuation, but if we decided to go a little bit off the particular dietary plan, you get a bigger spike. For me, if I woke up in the middle of the night, I'd look at that CGM, I'd have this huge spike as I was waking up. All right. So my
Like
blood,
blood
my
sugar.
blood sugar, yeah.
So did you, because what I would notice is that my blood sugar would actually drop and then come back up, which is part of that, like I was mentioning about cortisol, because I think not only is it, a hormonal issue in terms of like, progesterone or estrogen waking up in the
Yeah.
middle of the night, but it is a cortisol, because sometimes when you're sleeping, like say you ate dinner at 6 and then by 2 in the morning, sometimes that blood sugar can drop. Then your body, to save you, will raise up that cortisol to raise up that blood sugar, and then you wake up. And that's why
Now,
some people will wake up hungry. I've had patients tell me that they'll go get some food in the middle of the night because they're hungry. That's where I love the idea, and I love a protein breakfast, so having a good protein breakfast, but I think having a little protein snack before bed, not carbs, protein snack before bed can help balance that blood sugar while you're sleeping. So that's like one of the easiest first steps you can do if
Right.
you're having trouble staying asleep.
Yeah, I was just talking to someone just the other day about that. They're having some trouble sleeping, and she now in 2025, usually people don't tell you that they don't have an appetite. Usually it's the opposite, right? How many people have they told you, I'm just not hungry, right? Unless they're doing a GLP, right? If they're not doing a GLP, I'm just not hungry. But at the same time, that particular patient was having a really high stress level. Okay, so your cortisol goes up, it's gonna decrease appetite because your body doesn't need it. And I said, you know what? Same thing. I says, why don't you, just as an experiment, do two things. Have a protein fat breakfast, no carbs. And then right before you go to bed, have some source of protein and or fat right before, maybe not right as you're going into bed, but maybe 40 an hour to 45 minutes before bed, and just see if it helps. Because she said she's sort of waking up feeling a little bit jittery and agitated, and almost maybe not hot necessarily, but just sort of like she's a little shaky, like a classic blood sugar. Now this person I'm talking about is very thin. She's like just barely over 100 pounds. So you wouldn't think that there'd be a blood sugar issue in someone that was not the profile for something like that. So that's where, like you said, it could be a blood sugar and or a cortisol issue. Often is
Or
both.
both.
Yeah, now maybe in my case, when I saw the blood sugar elevated, that could have been from, like you said, blood sugar goes down because of the carbs, it crashes, and then your body's natural response is to cortisol's job, literally, and I know you know this, I'm telling everybody, but cortisol's job is to literally raise your blood sugar. That's why they call it a glucocorticoid. So if your blood sugar goes beyond that certain point, then cortisol automatically has to rise. And if that's at 2 in the morning, you're going to wake up and you're going to be wondering why you're awake at 2 in the morning, staring at the ceiling. Okay. And I think that's where people have a harder time, when that does happen, they have a harder time or a longer amount of time before they can fall back to sleep.
One other thing that I've found, and I know that you know this too, is taking phosphatidylserine is a nice supplement. It's a fat soluble supplement and it takes a while to get into your system, but it does help bring down cortisol. So when if somebody's having trouble staying asleep because phosphatidyl serine takes a little while to get into your system, is have that with like a little bit of a protein fat snack, because then you're going to absorb it better. But if you, I even like it when people can't fall asleep, maybe they just got a lot on their mind, and I've been using phosphatidylserine with people for over 20 years, is taking it at dinner because there's some protein and some fat there. So by the time it gets into your system, then you're ready to go to sleep, because we want to go to sleep before midnight. I say phosphatidylserine is a big one. And I know a lot of you probably take magnesium. Magnesium, do you use that a lot with your
Yeah, sure.
patients?
Yeah, magnesium is one of those sort of foundational things. Granted, we talked about on the last one we did about bones. There's like five different kinds of magnesium. Magnesium threonate is sort of the sleep specific one. And I've had a few people that just happened to try magnesium because they saw something on TikTok or Instagram, and they were sort of stunned at how impactful it was for them. Now there's the next person that takes it, they don't notice anything at all. So it's kind of hit or miss sometimes. But for the right person, the right form, the right dosage. Dosage, I think, sometimes gets, I think people have a tendency to underdose. Instead of 1 or 2 capsules in the beginning, you might need 3 or 4, and then gradually titrate down once you've actually been sleeping better at a certain point.
No, I fell in love with magnesium in my 30s because I've always been just okay, TMI, a little more on my bowels were a little more sluggish. That's just something I've had since I was a well, you know, well as a child. And magnesium citrate is great for constipation because it pulls that water into the large intestines. It does help relax the muscles and it helps you fall asleep. The glycinate I find with, so if somebody doesn't need the citrate more for their bowels, doing the glycinate is really nice because it helps relax the muscles. It does have a little bit of effect on the bowels, but not that much. And that one's a really very popular. And actually, magnesium glycinate does help the connection with estrogen. There is a connection with estrogen. So I really like magnesium glycinate. The L-threonate I've been taking, I take that on and off. Like, you know, I do a few things here and then stop and then experiment. But the magnesium L-threonate, I like that one. That one doesn't have an effect so much on the bowels, not even so much the muscles, but it does help. I think it crosses the blood-brain barrier and actually can kind of calm cortisol and calm that motor mind. So that's a good one if somebody's,
Mind, yeah, the racing thoughts, yeah, right.
if someone's waking up in the middle of the night, like I was even talking to a friend about her husband wakes up in the middle of the night and he's doing emails, and
Excuse
maybe
me.
that works for him because he's more international with his clients, but. At the same time, I'm like, well, it's not fun to wake up with anxiety, but I found that the magnesium L-threonate is nice for people that are waking up in the middle of the night. They can't fall back asleep, but they're waking up more with like this anxiousness or that motor mind, or they're thinking a lot,
Sure,
like a lot
sure.
of thoughts.
Now you said motor mind or racing thoughts, and it makes me think of using glycine. So we
Yes.
both like amino acids. So L-theanine is one that everyone knows about, but the one that people are not as aware of is using glycine, especially for those racing thoughts. Now I don't remember exactly the mechanism, but I know that glycine does have sort of a cortisol lowering effect. So if you're listening out there, don't quote me on that, or I don't remember exactly the mechanism, but I'm pretty sure that glycine has a now granted at a therapeutic dose for something like that is like, 2 to 5,000 milligrams, which is a pretty hefty dose. You and I usually recommend that in a powder form versus a capsule form, just because you're going to get more in a
So many
you're going
capsules.
to get more in a scoop than having to take a half a dozen pills, whatever, to get to that therapeutic level. I know you like so magnesium in a couple of different forms. I said glycine, L-theanine. I know
Oh
you
yeah,
like
love L-theanine.
yeah, I know you love L-theanine. We both do. Again, can be a little bit hit or miss. Sometimes in the beginning you need a little higher dose. Even up to 1,000 milligrams, I think can be, reasonable, and you sort of work
You
your
mean
way
for glycine or for
for
L-theanine?
L-theanine.
No, you go high. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's pretty high.
Up to, maybe not always, but up to that, and then sort of work your way back. Because I think when you're trying to get someone to fall asleep, that's what you're trying to achieve first. And once they start sleeping, then everything starts to improve. And then now some of that dosing can actually be reduced a little bit. And now they're able to figure out what their maintenance level is on some of those. Where if you just do one or two capsules or just a little bit, like usually an L-theanine, what's it, 200 milligrams?
Yeah, usually 200 milligrams. Like you said, you can go a little bit higher. It crosses the blood-brain barrier and it helps modulate GABA. It doesn't stimulate the receptors and it has something to do where it downregulates glutamate, which is very excitatory. So that's why I like L-theanine. But it doesn't make you sleepy. But if you're feeling anxious or wired at night, that can be really helpful. I don't find too much with the L-theanine for staying asleep. I think the magnesium L-threonate just in my experience seems to work better. And then like the glycine, I've found if people mix up the glycine in like a little water bottle and put it by their bed when they wake up in the middle of the night, take it then, because it may not have the longevity for it. Like melatonin, we've talked about melatonin before. Melatonin is usually more fast acting, more quick acting if it's going to work. And melatonin doesn't work for everybody. In fact, sometimes people don't like it at all. But for the ones that it does work, it helps you fall asleep. It doesn't necessarily help you stay asleep. There are some extended releases for melatonin. I've only seen that work in a handful of cases. I mean, I'm sure there are people that it does work. But the idea behind melatonin is not supposed to be a low grade level all night. It's actually supposed to be come from your pineal gland and it spikes up really high and then it comes down pretty fast, that's why it's best to go to bed before midnight because you might not get that pineal gland secreting that melatonin
Yeah,
super fast.
the hours prior to midnight are so 3 hours of sleep prior to midnight is better than 3 extra hours in the morning after midnight. So that's why I was asking you about bedtime earlier. Oh yeah, I'm up until midnight, 1 o'clock. It's like Okay, yeah, you got a sleep problem because you should, if you have a busy day, you should not be able to stay up that late, right? I mean, what time you get tired? Right around 7, 7:30, 8 o'clock.
8:30, but I'm a baby. I like to wake up early.
Yeah.
So that is one thing, my circadian rhythm. I love to wake up between, I usually wake up around 4:45, but then I might lay and hang out on my phone or something.
Yeah.
But I do like to wake up early. And we've talked about that before with circadian rhythms. If even if I did stay up late just because something was going on, I would not be able to sleep past five.
Yeah, right. So you just have this sort of, and we sort of
I'm
both
like,
do like
who's
this
that though?
7 day pattern where you go to bed at a time and you wake up at a time. Where as opposed to, let's say, on a day off for someone, they have to get up earlier on a work day, and then on a day off, they're able to sleep in an extra 2 hours. That's
How do they
usually,
do
I think
that?
that's a
I'm
usually
jealous.
it's a sign of a sleep deprivation.
Oh, I'm jealous. I
Because
wish I could do
if
that.
their circadian rhythm was working properly, they wouldn't be able to sleep longer. So I think that 5 days a week, people are developing a sleep debt. They're accruing this sleep deprivation, which again is making them more insulin resistant, and all those things are sort of getting worse. And they sleep in a little bit longer on the weekends. And I think there's some psychology there too. Monday morning is different than a Saturday morning, right? Getting up for work on a Monday feels like, oh God, here's another Monday. Waking up on a Saturday, now you got some free time and you get to have control of your day and you don't have that pressure of having to get to work. So I think there's some psychology that kind of plays in there. But the hormones on the back end of all that is, if you think about it, it's really, really sort of fascinating. I mean, if we lived outdoors under the moon and the stars and the sun, I mean, you and I have been camping before. You don't get to stay up until midnight. Unless you're partying, having a good time, you don't stay up much past the sun goes down because you're just too tired. There's no ambient light. There's nothing to keep you awake. And then people just start drifting off in their tent because literally there's no stimulation to keep you awake anymore.
What about the fire?
I don't even know the exact wavelength or the infrared or the whatever from the flame is not enough to suppress melatonin release, right? So if you don't have your phone in front of your face, right, you're suppressing melatonin, blue light, whatever it is. There's none of that wavelength of light coming off a fire flame, so your melatonin still goes up as the sun sets. And that's the part in America, like, we're privileged to have these lights all over the place, but at the same time, it's really having a field day on our endocrine systems. It really sort of messes everything up. So trying to recreate, everyone sort of knows having a really dark room in their house. Even in the evening, as people are kind of, winding down for the day, I like to turn the lights down early, right? What do you like to do?
I like all the lights on.
Yeah. I noticed, like, your mom too, like, every light in the house has to be on.
It's like comforting.
See, I'm the opposite. Once the sun starts to set, I want it dark. I just turn all the lights off. I'd rather have it, a little bit on the darker side. Because for me, then it's easier just to get drowsy and then it's time to drift off to sleep.
What about, have you heard, which I'm sure you have, I want to ask you about this, is watching the sun come up or having the sun on your eyes in the morning?
I think that everyone hears Dr. Huberman, right? Huberman Lab. He's all over the place online. He's been on his podcast, been on another, and he talks a lot about that, sort of circadian rhythm response. And he says there's sort of three ways to instill that cortisol awakening response: food, exercise. I think four ways: light, food, exercise, and temperature. So you increase your temperature. So cold plunge in the morning, hot shower at night, exercise in the morning, protein food in the morning, and then light in your eyes as quickly, as, I mean, I don't know, you and I don't wake up and go right out and stare at the sun in the
I
morning
love to
necessarily.
turn on the light, or at least I used to. Now I'm married, but I would always just turn the light on, just turn it on bright. But I know you hate that. You hate it if I turn on the bedside light,
I'm
like,
a
time to wake up.
I'm like a vampire. Like, I really want to, pull the covers over my head. I want to dive under the bed. I want to jump in the closet.
I love that.
I think it's
And
like,
it's not sun, it's just a light bulb.
well, I think that's why my pregnenolone is less than 10. I think I had too much brain trauma when I was playing football in high school. I think it's literally, I think it's definitely a response. The light goes on like that too early, and I don't respond very well at all. It's a, There's something there, and I really haven't delved into it enough to really know. But Something adrenal related, why I don't like light right away. But also you're wake up and you're ready to go. Like the minute you wake up, you're like, like a busy little bee, and I'm just a little bit slow to get started. And that's exactly why.
Hence the 8 o'clock at night. I'm ready. I'm like a baby. I'm ready to go to bed. I'm like a toddler. Time to go to bed.
Sure. That's where now you've turned me into a morning person, right? Because when we first met, 20 years ago, I was not a morning person. I'm still not much of a morning person, but I wake up at 5. I wake up at 4:30. I wake up at 5:15. Not a big deal, but I have a slow start to my morning where you're just up and ready to go right away. I'm sort of jealous because I can't really get going as once I'm going that I'm going, and it doesn't take me hours or nothing, but I don't really. I don't wipe the cobwebs out as quickly as you do. You're pretty good about that. You've always been good that way.
But hence, I'm not a night person.
Yeah,
So
right.
let's talk about any, what other s sleep patterns have you noticed that people have had issues with in your?
Well, let's see what we have here.
Well, I will say one thing that I guess I'm asking myself the question is
Okay.
a lot of women will say they wake up all night to go to the bathroom.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
You know,
of course.
so I understand you wake up, I'm awake, I might as well go to the bathroom just because I'm up, might as well. But there are a lot of women that say, you know, I wake up and I go to the bathroom all night. That's actually a pretty common theme.
Yeah.
And that seems to be more to do with cortisol. Cortisol is the culprit, but also estrogen is when estrogen goes down, it has an effect on the antidiuretic hormone. So then your where normally while you're sleeping, your kidneys are supposed to really slow down and start filtering out that fluid. But when you have that effect on that antidiuretic hormone because that estrogen's down, is it actually will cause you to feel like you have to urinate all night. So
Yeah.
women will say they, so that's one process. And then of course, when that estrogen goes down, sometimes that urethra can get a little bit lax. So they feel like they have to go to the bathroom, or even the bladder can feel irritated when you go into menopause and perimenopause. So that's a big one that I find for a lot of women. They'll say, yeah, I just go to the bathroom all night long, like 4 times a night. And it's not diabetes, you know, because you think about someone having to urinate frequently. You think, oh, it's diabetes, or, you know, you're drinking tons of water at night.
Yeah.
You know, they're not drinking tons of water. I do think that there might, I have to look this up a little bit, but it does seem like there's a correlation between the electrolytes. Like women will say, I drink so much water and then I have to go to the bathroom. There's something to do with the way the electrolytes are once we hit perimenopause and
Yeah, that's
menopause.
something I've heard recently as well too, and I haven't looked enough into that either, but almost like drinking water all day long dilutes your electrolytes. So now is your way your body tries to re-regulate is it just wants to pee out all that fluid. Now, volume wise, if you're drinking a lot, you're going to pee a lot, plain and simple, right? Where I think some people should try to drink more earlier in the day and then taper it off. Easier said than done, right?
Oh,
I know
yeah.
you have a big pitcher of water, big
I have
glass of
two
water.
glasses of
Yeah.
water.
I don't know why you do that. I don't drink any water at night, but you drink water all the time.
Yeah, I love water, but it's interesting you say that about the electrolytes. I remember this was a long time ago. I was talking to this fella that drives a truck, and he said one of the trucker's tricks was to drink a Gatorade because you don't want to go to the bathroom while you're driving a truck for hours and hours. You want to get somewhere and get there fast because that gets you money. As they said, he would drink Gatorade. And so I remember thinking, oh, something that, so that's like a trucker trick is to drink electrolytes. So I remember, so that's one thing that I tell a lot of women to do is just take some electrolytes, drink them before bed and see if you don't have to urinate as often. I will say as girls, we all have to go to the bathroom maybe once. I mean, more than that, that's not good. But if you have to go once, that's really not that big of a deal. But I feel like the electrolytes is like a really great trick.
And I think that you got to be a little careful, like what you just recommended, or what that
Oh yeah, this is
gentleman says.
educational purposes only, not
I
medical
wouldn't.
advice, la la la.
I wouldn't necessarily recommend that one. I'd be very
I've no
specific.
Gatorade,
I think there's
this is a
nowadays.
long time ago before they had
Of
electrolyte
course.
things.
Now, there's lots of options there, and there's some that have no sugar whatsoever. I would choose one of those. There's a few of them that are on the market that are actually very good. You can see the dog in
You
the
can see her.
I've come across that recently where it actually decreases the frequency. Now, for most women in perimenopause or menopause, one time a night is reasonable. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, that's okay. As long as you can fall back to sleep. If you can't fall back to sleep, then we got to talk about, you know, doing some things to help you fall back asleep.
Yeah, so I always when I talk to a new patient and I ask them, okay, if you had to letter grade your sleep, A to an F, what is it? most of the time they're either like a C minus to an F when they come to us the first time. And then eventually we're trying to get them in that, 90 days to 6 month time frame, we're trying to get them to a B level sleep. So B level, they fall asleep early and quickly, right? 10 o'clock, they fall asleep within a few minutes. They stay asleep 3 or 4 hours. Like you said, they go to bathroom middle of the night, or they wake up middle of the night, no bathroom. And then they go back to sleep easily. They sleep for 3 or 4 hours and they're up for the day. For some women, that even some men too, I think that's sometimes the best you can hope for. I think, trying to shoot for complete straight hour, 8 hours straight through, I think is a little unrealistic. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, no, I agree. I totally agree. If you have to wake up once, go to the bathroom, as long as you fall back asleep, you sleep through the night, and then see how you feel the next morning. I mean, I know, it's just, we know when we slept good, right? We just know.
Regardless of the hours. All right. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.